So in our alphabet, we have reached the letter P, and it's providential that it falls on the Sunday of St. Gregory Palamas. So it's the second Sunday of Lent, and every year on the second Sunday of Lent, the Church presents us with the commemoration of St. Gregory Palamas. So I'm going to say a lot of things, but we'll try to organize them in 3 points: who he is, what he is, and why he is commemorated now during Lent. So St. Gregory was born at the end of the 1200s, so he lived in the last part of the 13th century and the 14th century. He was born to a kind of a upper-class family in Constantinople. This is before the city had fallen to the Ottomans, so there was still an emperor, the small empire that it was still, but it was a kingdom. And his father was an advisor to the emperor, we might say kind of like a cabinet member, someone who would sit with the emperor among with others and give him counsel. And so Gregory had a good education, but his father died early, and so the emperor sort of made sure that Gregory had everything that he needed and was educated, and was hoping that when he finished school, college, whatever, that he would enter into public imperial service of the government. But in his early 20s, Gregory decided rather to become a monk, and he went to Mount Athos, which even at that time, like it is today, even at that time was kind of a center of Greek Orthodox monasticism. And he went and he lived in the monastery of Vatopedi for several years. So he became a novice and a monk, and he went through all the stages, and then he switched to another monastery after that. And so having spent several years in the obedience that is in the community, he got the blessing and he went with a smaller group of people outside the walls of the monastery and became an ascetic and was taught and learned and practiced the art of prayer, where they fast more, they pray more, and the so-called hesychasm, where they really intensely practice the prayer of the heart or noetic prayer. And he did that for a while, and at that time in the history of the world, there were pirates and incursions onto Mount Athos, so it was not safe always to be there. So his group, his brethren, his spiritual brothers, moved to Thessaloniki, where it was protected, and they set up their little skete, their little monastic dwelling there, and they continued. And finally, he would go back to Mount Athos. He would become the abbot of one of the monasteries there. And then he would be involved in a theological dispute that arose around 1340-ish, where somebody, a guy named Balaam, was a theologian. And he came from the West, but he was of Greek, like from Italy, but he was of Greek descent, and so he identified as being Greek Orthodox. But he saw what the monks were doing on Mount Athos, of praying intensely and claiming that they were seeing the uncreated light of God, and he could not wrap his mind around it. He tried to explain it with philosophical principles and was unable to, and therefore he claimed that it was some kind of error, that it was error that these monks were maybe deceived or just being overly enthusiastic, but they were not seeing the light of God. But this teaching is very old in the church. It just needed to be re-articulated. And so the monks on Mount Athos, knowing that Gregory, you know, had excelled in this, but also was a very lettered and capable speaker and writer, they asked, could you please write a defense of our practices and of, you know, what we believe that is happening? And he did. And you can read the history, you know, online or in a book. It's very quite fascinating. But finally, it got to a battle between him and Balaam. And there were a series of councils in Constantinople over a period of about 10 years that dealt with this issue, the theological issue of, is it possible for human beings to participate in God? And if they do, how do they do it? And they articulated once again the theology of energies of God versus the essence and the energies. So that the light of God, the light that the ascetics and the Christians may see They do see, they are seeing God, but it's not his essence, which is unknowable. It's his energies which come down to us. Again, you can read about that. So that council, and another time we can talk about this, but those 10 sort of years of councils kind of collectively are considered the 9th ecumenical council. Oh my gosh, yes, there's also an 8th in addition to the 7 that we think that there are only, and we can talk about that another time. But anyway, so then Gregory eventually gets elected to be the Archbishop of Thessaloniki, and he has a little trouble actually being enthroned because of some political stuff. Finally, he gets there, he's enthroned, and then some years after, he was on a boat trip somewhere, and he's sort of taken hostage by the Ottoman Turks, and he's taken to where the Sultan is, and he's there for about a year, and there's some actually fascinating writing he got when they realized who they had. You know, they put him up for, someone had to pay a big, you know, ransom for him. Actually, I think it was the Serbs. The Serbian king at that time paid the ransom. But while he was there, he engaged some of the theologians, the Islamic theologians and teachers on the subject, and kind of proved to them through all the books that they, like the Psalms and stuff, that really there is a Holy Trinity and, you know, the truth of Christianity. So that's an interesting, if you can find those writings, those are actually quite fascinating. Anyway, he's returned to Thessaloniki, he serves his people, he dies, you know, not too old, but he dies. And shortly after his death, just 9 years after his death, the Patriarchate proclaimed, you know, recognized him as a saint, and there were many miracles and stuff. And his relics today are actually in Thessaloniki. I've had the privilege of venerating his relics several times, and also being at a monastery named after him in Ohio for several years. So that's who he was. Now, what he was a pious Orthodox Christian, grew up in the church, so some things we can identify with him, right? He went to college, he went and became a monk. He was obedient, he became a priest, he became an abbot, he was elected a bishop, he was educated, so we can call him a church father, because church fathers are not only the holy ones, but holy men who can are able, with the tools of knowledge and education, to articulate it and share it, okay? He was a confessor because he, you know, when he was held hostage, he confessed the faith. He didn't shed his blood, you know, he didn't die as a martyr like St. Demetrius or St. George, but for goodness sake, he has many, many other crowns. He's a miracle worker and a great father of our church. Now, why is he celebrated on the second Sunday of Lent? In a nutshell, because the theological issue that, you know, he resolved is considered like in a continuation of the Sunday of Orthodoxy, and because, you know, the Orthodox dogma was articulated, we put him at the second Sunday.